Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 2nd, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with author Rachel Weaver about her writing class tonight. We'll get the details about an upcoming bereavement group meeting. Dmitry Karamazov will be here to talk about the new old-time Chautauqua coming to town in July. Regina Falache of the Daughters of the American Revolution will tell us about their upcoming award ceremony. And we'll speak with Ernestine Hayes, one of AWARE's four women of distinction. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new study says the five tribes of Idaho play a major role in the state's economy. Reporter Steve Jackson has more.
The study was put together by University of Idaho research economist Steve Peterson. It says the five tribes have a $1.1 billion annual sales impact on the Gem State's economy. The five tribes collectively raise the gross state product by $653 million a year, or about 1% of the gross state product for the year 2013. Steve Peterson says a big portion of the money comes from tribal casinos, which have also helped to foster partnerships with local businesses and governments.
It's given them a sense of independence. It's helped foster a sense of entrepreneurship. It's helped, I think, the tribes realize that they can shape their own future and their own destiny.
The study found that more than 500,000 people visit tribal casinos in Idaho a year, and 60% of those visitors are from out of state, adding new money to the state's economy. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
A Native nonprofit hopes to boost the economy of the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation in South Dakota by promoting cultural tourism. Jim Kent reports.
Participating artists in the Rediscovering Native Art on Cheyenne River project will become the centerpiece of a cultural tourism marketing campaign designed to promote the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation as a destination. Tanya Fiddler is executive director of the Four Bands Community Fund.
Four Bands is a loan fund that looks at the economic opportunities, does market assessment and things like that, and trying to identify industries that are viable in a state where tourism is the second leading industry. We had been doing some work cultivating the tourism sector about 5 years ago and then kind of moved around into some other areas and are coming back to it.
Part of Fiddler's return to exploring and enhancing tourism on Cheyenne River comes from the substantial funding from several sources to support Native artists in developing successful arts businesses. Over the next 2 years, Fiddler hopes to not only positively impact the reservation's economy, but also maintain and strengthen the Native American culture there. Fiddler adds that the Four Bands Community Fund has recently created a visitor guide for the reservation and will continue to update that as the Rediscovering Native Art on Cheyenne River project expands. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Navajo filmmaker Christopher Silgowski has gained international attention with recent screenings of his work. He spoke with Polly Dineklaw about one of his projects.
This screenplay landed him the Time Warner Producer Fellowship offered through Sundance's Native American and Indigenous program. Movement Through the Valley is based off a story his cousin told him last summer. It's about a Navajo police officer who practices Christianity and began dealing with supernatural entities. The main character's Christian faith is challenged and his Navajo traditions accepted. Sigelski currently writes and directs short films that feature stories from Native America. He hopes this film changes people's misunderstandings of Native American spirituality.
A lot of misconceptions about Native American culture in general, and I wanted to truthfully represent the subject content.
As a fellow for Sundance's Native American and Indigenous program, Sigelski has been receiving support with his project by participating in screenings, networking events, and meetings with industry leaders, including recently at the Sundance Film Festival. Sigelski's latest short film, Bloodlines, was recently screened at Sundance and accepted into the International Berliner Film Festival held in Berlin, Germany. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dineklaw.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 2nd. What is it? 2015. And it's about 6 minutes after the hour. I'm your host, Scott Burton. And joining me now in the studio is Joan Partis of 49 Writers and their guest. Our guest here in Juneau right now, Rachel Weaver, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for coming in out of this beautiful sunny day to spend some time with us. You're going to be teaching a two-part class out at the university, Rachel, tonight and tomorrow. Is that right?
True.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And 49 Writers is the host of this. Why don't we start there, Joan? Tell us a little bit about 49 Writers and what you're up to.
Absolutely. So, Scott, I'm a board member of 49 Writers, along with Katrina Pearson and Amy O'Neill Huck. Those are the Juno board members, and then we have a bevy of them around the state. It's a statewide organization to promote and support literary arts.
Member.
Yes, you are, and I am too. And Rachel is one of our many visiting authors that come in and do workshops. They're definitely MFA-level type workshops. In fact, Rachel teaches at the St. Regis University's Low Residency MFA program. And she was just up in Anchorage, and she was also up in Palmer. And she's here to teach a six-hour class, 6 to 9 p.m. tonight at UAS, Egan Hall, room 221. And then again tomorrow, it's writing the three-dimensional novel or memoir, Tackling the Big Project. And if you want to register, there's actually a few more seats available, but you do need to do that online at 49 Writers. You could just search it on the web and then go to the Juno tab and join us. There's a few seats left, and it's at UAS. And we're really excited because Rachel's debut novel is called Point of Direction. It's based in and around Juno. In fact, it's based on Eldridge Rock in the Channel, about two people living at that lighthouse. And for a debut novel, it's done an amazing job. Oprah picked it as one of her picks in May. Yoga Journal picked it. NPR did a great review. Publishers Weekly did a great review. And the American Booksellers gave her an award. So, wow, all you writers want something like this for your first book or your 10th book. It's a really, really good read. I read it. It's a really, really good read.
Okay.
So we're glad to have Rachel here.
Absolutely. Rachel, you have lots of roots sort of here in Southeast as well. Tell us about those.
I did. I came up in, I believe, 2000, and I worked the first summer on one of the smaller tour boats that came through Juneau. So I was here every 6 days, picking up passengers, going up to Skagway, out to Sitka, doing a lot of paddling. And then I got a job with the Forest Service down in Petersburg, and I lived there year-round for the next 5 years after that.
And during that time, were you doing a lot of writing?
I was, yeah. I obviously had a lot of time in the winter. Uh-huh. I worked seasonally, and I had always wanted to write a novel, but I had no idea what I was doing. I had studied science in school, but I'd always been a really big reader and thought, well, now's the time if there's ever going to be one. And so I just started writing, I wrote so much. Actually, I got really, really addicted to the creative process, and I lived way out the road, just a generator, so I would work on my computer in the mornings in the winter. And back then, now Petersburg has a really nice new library, but back then the library was in the city hall, and it didn't open till noon, but of course my battery on my computer would run out way before noon, so I would go to the city hall and sit outside the library upstairs and plug in my computer and basically steal electricity until they opened at noon. And the librarian down there, Tara Alcock, eventually felt sorry enough for me that she gave me my own little office. So I ended up doing a lot of writing in the winters in Petersburg. And I wrote the first draft of Point of Direction and the first draft of my second book, which takes place in Petersburg, which hopefully I'll be finished with here in another couple weeks.
Okay, and you brought a selection from Point of Direction, didn't you? Would you be kind enough to share that with us?
Yes. So This section is close to the beginning of the novel. The main character, Anna, is hitchhiking the Alcan on her way up to Alaska. She gets picked up by Kyle, who's the other main character. And for a couple different reasons, she decides to ride in the back of the truck. So that's where we are when this section opens. We drove north, cradled between ocean and mountains. As Canada melted into Alaska, the previous 2 years chipped away from me in small, irregular pieces until I was back to that morning on the ice, peering into the depths of the crevasse, willing myself over the edge. After years of avoiding what had happened, I was now headed straight towards it. 3 weeks earlier, I had written the 10-digit phone number on a small square of paper, slid it into the inside pocket in the top of my backpack, and set out. As the hours passed and the mountains got steeper, the guilt started out on its well-worn path, clawing its way through me. I closed my eyes as it spread through my body and began to hum. I shifted my weight against my backpack. It didn't help. I took a deep breath and concentrated on the trees whipping past, reminding myself that this is what I needed to do, that this is my last choice. That didn't help either. It was worse than usual. Now that I was moving so quickly north, I started to feel like I should get out of the truck. I started to feel like I should turn around, start walking south. I studied the back of Kyle's neck through the window as we sped northward, the smooth arc of skin and muscle, a solidity I had sought on rock walls, a solidity I could not find in myself. I wanted to be in the cab. I wanted to have someone at my side. I knocked on the small window between us. He pulled over, and I climbed into the front seat, settling my gaze on the double yellow line stretching into the distance. We arrived in Neely on a day when the clouds hung 300 feet above the water, swallowing all the mountains. When the road ended at the ocean's edge, I could not see the glaciers hanging overhead, but I could feel their presence. "Isn't it beautiful?" Kyle squinted into the rain, everything around us some shade of gray or black. It was beautiful in a way that demanded something, a landscape that has the power to ask anyone at any time to measure all the hidden parts of themselves.
Wow. So if Joan and I go to your class tonight and tomorrow, will we be able to write like that?
Clearly, yes.
I didn't know it could be so easy.
I should say, too, that Neely is Haynes. I just renamed it in the book.
Wow. Beautiful writing. Thanks for sharing that with us. Tell us what you have in mind for tonight's class and for tomorrow night's class.
So this class is really sort of a toolbox for writers of fiction and memoir. We'll talk about pretty much all the tools that you need to make it feel like a book, to really add depth. So character development, plot structure, tension and conflict, scene work, sort of all the things that you need to check off your list in order to have a full-length novel that has some weight to it.
Okay, and these are at UAS. Joan, can you tell us about all the details again?
Absolutely. So it's a two-part class, so it's not two separate classes. You're signing up for the six-hour class. It's 6 to 9 p.m. starting tonight at the university. It's in the Egan Classroom 221, so that's the library, and it's one of the classrooms down below. To sign up, there are a few more seats. To sign up, you need to go to 49 Writers. It's $95 for members of 49 Writers. It costs $49 to join. Or $115 for non-members, and it's free to current UAS students.
Oh, great. Let's see. What else was I going to ask? Who would you say would benefit most from one of these classes?
Well, I've taken quite a few of these classes throughout Alaska, sometimes when I'm up in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Tutka Bay retreat. And I think the instructors... We really seek out authors who could also teach, who are usually employed at an MFA program, because one necessarily doesn't mean the other.
Sure.
And I think anybody, like I'm pretty deep into a fiction piece right now, but a toolkit is really, really helpful, and also how to tackle something 60,000 words plus. You know, how do you keep it going? I think people who have an idea, people who are interested, I think it's really – more the mindset of if you're interested in writing and you want to learn from a published author who also knows how to teach, I would really be surprised if people aren't going to go away with something really useful. So I think it's for the whole spectrum, people who are starting out and people who also want to brush off and maybe look at their piece in a new way. Would you agree?
I would, yeah. It's definitely, the class is definitely aimed at folks who are either coming at it with an idea but don't really know how to start, or all the way through the drafting process and just need to make sure they've got what they need in there or ways that they could sharpen what they already have written.
All right. Well, Rachel Weaver, thank you for visiting us here in Juneau and for participating in these classes. Joan Pardes, thank you so much for everything.
Always a pleasure to be here, Scott.
Are we missing anything? Want to add anything?
No. The book is great. Point of direction. You don't have to take it from me. You could go check it out on Goodreads, what other people have to say. Definitely worth the read. And it's here in our backyard, kind of our liquid backyard.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 2nd of March, 2015. The novelist John Irving, born on this day in Exeter, New Hampshire, 1942, whose first big successful novel was The World According to Garp, came out in 1978. It's the birthday of Theodore Geisel, Springfield, Massachusetts, 1904, who wrote under the name Dr. Seuss. His first book for children, 1937, and To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street. In 1955, an educator asked Dr. Seuss if he'd write a book to help children learn how to read and gave him a list of 300 words that most first graders know, and he had to write the book using only those words. And that was the book that would become The Cat in the Hat. It uses only 220 different words. Later, Seuss's publisher bet him $50 that he couldn't write a book using only 50 different words, and Seuss won the bet with his book Green Eggs and Ham. It's the birthday of the journalist and novelist Tom Wolfe, born in Richmond, Virginia, 1931, author of The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, The Right Stuff, and many other books. He got a Ph.D. at Yale, but decided to go into newspaper reporting. And then during a newspaper strike in New York City, when he lost his job at the paper he worked for, he decided to pitch an idea to Esquire magazine for a story about the hot rod car culture around Southern California. He had a hard time trying to write the piece, finally just turned in his notes, and Esquire published the notes. And that was The Candy-Colored Tangerine Flake Streamlined Baby. Came out in 1965. Tom Wolfe wrote an essay a few years ago arguing that the newspaper industry would stand a much better chance of survival if editors encouraged reporters to provide the emotional reality of the news rather than just the facts. He said there are four technical devices needed to get to the emotional core of the story, devices that are used in fiction. And those devices are, one, constructing scenes, two, dialogue, lots of it, three, carefully noting social status details, everything from dress and furniture to the infinite status clues of speech, how one talks to superiors or inferiors. And four, point of view, in the Henry James sense of putting the reader inside the mind of someone other than the writer. Those, said Tom Wolfe, are the devices that give fiction its absorbing or gripping quality, that make the reader feel present in the scene described and even inside the skin of a particular character. Here's a poem for today by Jane Hirschfield, Three Mornings. In Istanbul, my ears, three mornings, heard the early call to prayer. At fuller light, heard birds, then water birds and tree birds, birds of migration. Like three knowledges, I heard them, incomprehension, sweetened distance, longing. When the body dies, where will they go, those migrant birds and prayer calls, as heat from sheets when taken from a dryer? With voices of the ones I loved, great loves and small loves, train wheels, crickets, clock ticks, thunder. Where will they, when, in fragrant, tumbled heat, they also leave? Three Mornings, a poem by Jane Hirschfield from The Beauty, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by LegalZoom, for over 10 years providing legal solutions for business owners, families, and individuals, including incorporation, LLCs, wills, and living trusts. LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 2nd, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and it's about 20 minutes after the hour. And now I'm joined in the studio. We're going to be talking about an upcoming bereavement group meeting. Colleen Jones, Laura Damron, welcome to the studio today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, nice to have both of you. You're with Hospice and Home Care of Juno, and you're both bereavement coordinators, is that right?
My title, I'm Laura, and I'm the social worker. So I work more with people before death than with families who have varying needs.
Okay. Can you share with us a little bit about what your day-to-day work is like with Hospice and Home Care of Juno, and then we can talk a little bit more about this class?
Sure. So my work is meeting with individuals and families with a variety of needs. Now, it may be somebody in our hospice program who are coping with an impending death, but it may also be somebody who's trying to determine what resources are available to help them get better or, meet needs that aren't currently being met. And then Colleen and I and the whole hospice team also deal with folks and support them after a death.
Okay. And Colleen, is that
my role mainly is just helping support the families after death, and we contact the families at various times in the following year, but we also want to provide some support group options for people that just really need a little more guidance through this transition phase. And so I kind of do the bereavement coordination and follow-up.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this 6-week bereavement support group that you've put together. You want to start, Laura?
Sure. So we are meeting with, it'll be a closed group. We will, we're asking people to register in advance, and we're hoping that people can attend all 6 sessions. And that allows the group to form and support each other, and we will bring in some education pieces, but an awful lot of the healing and the growth that happens is by the support of the other members and by learning from each other the universality of their losses and their experience.
And I was going to ask both of you on a day-to-day basis sort of what you do with people who are facing this, and I imagine that these will also be available in the class. What are some things that you find are most helpful to people going through this process?
Well,
I think the most valuable is to realize that they're not alone, that there's others out there that are either experiencing a lot of the same issues, and just to know that there's support there, that I'm, that's what we just want to offer, ways to help going through that process. Everybody's at different stages, everybody takes different time, but there are some unique things that most people tend to go through, and so just helping them recognize some of the aspects of grief and bereavement, and that they're okay, that we will be there with them, hopefully, supporting them, and that others are there doing the same journey as well. So you're just not alone.
Mm. Yeah. So this support group will begin on March 23rd, and it'll be on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 9. Can you sort of describe what an evening might look like?
Sure. When we first come, we will talk about the homework we've done in the week before, and share with each other how the week has been. Sometimes there's a lot of emotion that's come up that folks talk about. We'll have a session of an exercise or a learning thing. We'll do some, many of the evenings we do an art project or something to kind of try to access more of the other side of our brain, the less literal. And so that people aren't sitting there judging every word they say, but kind of flowing.
We just have a lot of sharing. Yeah. We have a break time with the snack. It's just a really wonderful experience of, I think, just a safe place for people to explore what they're experiencing, to cry, to laugh, to just, and learn from one another. But it's a 2.5 hour time frame, and we tend to take it all up. It's amazing how it goes by pretty quickly.
And you were telling me this is designed for people who have just experienced the loss of a loved one. And you, is there a time range that you suggest?
We would suggest probably at least 3 months after the death. And then it can be as far out, as far away as people need it. Mm-hmm. If they're still processing or they never had the opportunity to process that loss, then it might be a useful place to come. If somebody has had an anticipated death that they did a lot of grieving during the dying process, then they might be ready sooner than the 3 months. But most people in the beginning, right after a death, are so numb, they're not really going to be able to take in a lot of information. And certainly one of the things I've heard from so many people is that fear that they're going crazy. Because grief is such an overwhelming experience. And I know from my own experience, and I know from talking to many people, that finding out you're not going crazy, this is natural, is a huge relief.
I bet. If somebody was curious or wanted to know whether or not they would be a nice fit in this group, Laura, should they contact you?
Yes. So they can call me at Hospice and Home Care at 463-6111, or they can email me at laura.damron@ccsjuno.org. And we do have flyers around, so you can look for that information in writing if that helps. Or just call our hospice office, and we'll get in touch with you.
Okay, and that CCS, that's Catholic Community Service, mm-hmm. And your Hospice and Home Care, which is a division of that. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, so this starts March 23rd. It's Mondays from 6:30 to 9. Suggested donation of $80.
Mm-hmm, for this series, but we really want people to be aware that if they can't afford to pay that, they should still feel free to come, because grief doesn't only, people with money are not the only ones who should be able to deal with their grief.
Colleen Jones and Laura Damron, thank you so much for your time today. Anything you'd like to add?
No, thanks very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Amidst the fiery wreckage of love's sweet tears, in a field where the flowers fade and our years disappear. When you're sad and when you're lonely and you haven't got a friend, just remember death is not the end. And when all that you hold sacred falls down and does not mend, just remember death is not the end, not the end, not the end. Just remember that death is not the end. When the storm clouds gather round you and heavy rains descend, just remember that death is not the end, and there's no one there to comfort you with a helping hand to lend. Just remember, death is not the end, not the end, not the end. Just remember, death is not the end. Oh, the tree of life is growing where the spirit never dies, and the bright light of salvation shines in dark and dreary skies. When you're standing on the crossroads that you cannot comprehend, just remember, death is not the end, and all your dreams have vanished. You don't know what's up around the bend. Just remember, death is not the end, not the end, not the end. Just remember, death is not the end. Just remember, death is not the end.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 2nd, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 30 minutes past the hour, and joining me now in the studio is Paul McGee. Did I get that right, Paul?
Say, yeah.
A.K.A. Dmitry Karamazov.
Ho.
Welcome. Ho-ho.
Thank you.
We were just talking, so you guys were here a year ago?
Exactly 1 year ago, yeah.
Karamazov Brothers.
The high school theater, yeah.
Oh,
it was,
man.
Really fun.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was a good show.
And now you're back wearing a similar hat, but kind of a little
kind of different.
Kind of
we're coming back. The Karamazovs are coming back, but we're also coming back with about 46 other people and doing what's called a Chautauqua. And we're called the New Old Time Chautauqua. We'll be here July 1st through 4th in town, and we do all kinds of different events. But you probably are wondering, what is a Chautauqua? And I dug up today a newspaper article written on August 29th, 1918 in the Alaska Daily Dispatch here in Juneau, because the first Chautauqua came here in 1918 in September, and people then didn't know what a Chautauqua is, and so they wrote an article about what that is, and I'm going to read a little bit
Please
from
do.
That article
yeah, yeah.
written right here in Juneau. So, some interesting facts about the Chautauqua movement and what it has accomplished. What do you think when you hear the word Chautauqua? Anybody? do you know that the Chautauqua movement is directly fostered and supported by more personally interested business and professional men than any one world movement, either educational, social, or political? Well, that's not the case anymore. do you know that the Chautauqua movement has grown in 30 years from one assembly to over 5,000 assemblies? That's true. Do you know that the Chautauquas are brought to over 700 communities in the United States and Western Canada through Ellison White Service? That's the company that brought the Chautauquas to the West Coast. Do you know that Chautauqua is annually attended by more people than baseball? Do you know that Chautauqua brings the world's greatest scientists, authors, lecturers, statesmen, musicians, and entertainers to the doors of more than 12 million people who otherwise are practically shut out from the outside world? That certainly explains Juno. Do you know that more than 250,000 public-spirited men and women in Canada and the United States willingly obligate themselves for the financial responsibilities necessary to bring Chautauqua to their respective communities? Do you know that they do this without the possibility of personal financial gain? Do you know why? First, it is sort of a 20th century country fair, which features intellect, oratory, art, music, and entertainment rather than carnival attractions. And that explains us. Second, the Chautauqua movement has proven the most effective community builder. For to be successful, the Chautauqua impels the cooperation of the entire community in a united effort for the common good. The Chautauqua is broadly educational without being academic. Fourth, the Chautauqua has solved the problem of clean, wholesome public entertainment. Fifth, without touch of creed or denomination, the Chautauqua is consistently a true expression. It is Catholic only in the sense that it embraces all creeds and faiths. Protestant only in that it protests against all evil. Okay. Sixth, the Chautauqua platform is democratically a political but nonpartisan forum for discussion of great questions by the moving brains of the world. That's true. Seventh, the Chautauqua movement is the greatest leveler of prejudice in church, state, and school known to modern times. Eighth, the Chautauqua is an international movement toward world democracy expressed in the fellowship of mutual service, emulating the highest inspirations of mankind in every avenue of progressive endeavor.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So it's essentially what we are still doing, although we are the last traveling Chautauqua left in America.
And how many are in your crew?
There will be about 50 of us.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you usually visit a community for about 3 days?
Yeah. We'll be here actually the 1st through the 4th. Because it's July the 4th, we're going to also join in with all the 4th of July celebrations. We have a 25-piece marching band, so we're going to be in, marching with the parade, and hopefully we're going to join up with the Juno marching band and make a massive mega marching band also. And we're working with the Douglas 4th of July committee, and we also do workshops. We bring about 25 workshops with us, and it's encouraged the community to do workshops. Our workshops range from mask making and learning how to juggle and stuff like that, to also history and, lectures and stuff like that. And we also do community shows. So one of the days that we're here, we're going to be going to the prison. We'll be going to the youth detention center and to the Pioneer Home. And we're also going to have a big community potluck. And with music and everything, and and that's completely free for people to come. And of course, we finish with a huge show, which we hopefully are going to do in Centennial Hall, and that involve us and, the Flying Karamazov Brothers, but many other performers, a lot of people who've been on Broadway who give up their time. Chautauqua is a nonprofit organization, and we are all volunteers. Nobody gets paid.
So all of this sort of vaudevillian entertainment, but a huge community aspect. Why do you do that?
Why do we do it?
Yeah.
Well, we feel like we want to, do our part to healing the world, and we feel like the way to do that is through community, the people, actually communicating with each other and working towards the betterment of all. And part of that is education, and part of that is, entertainment and, laughter. We basically say the mission of the Chautauqua is to build community through education, entertainment, and laughter. And that's sort of what we do. And we all give up at least a month of our time every year to do this. And no one's ever been paid for it.
Wow. And what other communities are you going to visit in Southeast?
We are going to go to Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, Juneau, Hoonah, Haines, and Sitka.
Wow, you guys are going to have so much fun, and we're all going to be so lucky to have you.
Well, it'll be great. And tonight we have a meeting. For those of people who are interested, we have a meeting at the small meeting room in the public downtown library from 6:30 to 8, I believe.
And people can figure out how they can become involved?
Yeah, we have an organizing committee. And there are certain positions that we want to fill, like, someone who will do the parade, someone who would be the tech director, someone who will help us find food, someone who will help us, get our camping situation. We camp when we go to these places. So anyone who wants to be involved, please come to the downtown library this evening. And we're going to be putting that committee together. And then we have a committee on our side. And so the parade person, for instance, talks to our parade person. So no one person is, having to hold down the whole fort. And it's also fun because it's like the article I just read. It's actually the building of the Chautauqua, of making it happen, is part of the magic of it.
Sure, I bet. So you guys are the new old-time Chautauqua.
The new old-time Chautauqua. We're the last traveling Chautauqua left in America.
Reinvented vaudeville.
Yeah,
I read somewhere.
Exactly.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. From July 1st through 5th, you'll be here in Juneau. Tonight is the planning meeting again. Did you say Centennial Hall?
The meeting's in the downtown library, in the small meeting hall. We'll probably play Centennial Hall when we do our big show, and which might be on July the 3rd. We're planning that right now. So.
Well, this is going to be a lot of fun. If somebody hasn't seen the Karamazov Brothers or some of the stuff you guys do as the Chautauqua, can you give us just a brief sort of summary of some of the stuff you do?
Yeah, we, if you haven't seen the Flying Karamazov Brothers, we were here a year ago. We basically do what used to be called New Wave Vaudeville. We've kind of reinvented vaudeville in that, except that instead of doing a 7-minute act, we do a 2-hour show. Our show is kind of theatrical, but it's also got skills. Our skills happen to be juggling for the most part, but we're also musicians, so we play a lot of music. And mostly we do comedy. Mostly we entertain. The style of the show is basically that. It has usually a sort of a more theatrical element to it as well. And there will be great performers. There will be, you know, great – we have a choir also. So we also encourage local musicians to join our band. We send out music in advance. So anyone who wants to play music with our band, which is called the Fighting Instruments of Karma Marching Chamber Band / Orchestra can
is there an acronym for that?
Yeah, it is, but I can't possibly remember what it is. Anyway, they can the person who's going to be coordinating the music, you can talk to them. They'll probably be contacting you, and you get the music in advance. Or if you want to be in the choir, we're going to be doing Beethoven's Ode to Joy this year with some funny vaudeville elements to it. You certainly are welcome to join, and someone will hopefully contact you, or you can contact the organizing committee here in Juneau.
And so much of what you do is also visual, and I found both of your videos, I think, on YouTube this morning. If you Google the New Old Time Chautauqua, and you can see some of the stuff these guys do, listeners, it's really fun.
Oh,
so check that out. The meeting is tonight at the Downtown Library at what time again?
6:30 to 8.
Dimitri, thank you again for coming on today.
It was my pleasure.
We'll look forward to seeing you tonight and then back in early July.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, March 2nd. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. And now on the telephone with me is Regina Falache of the Daughters of the American Revolution. Welcome, Regina.
Thank you, Scott. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show. Can you start by telling us a little bit about what the Daughters of the American Revolution does?
Oh, certainly. It's a nonprofit, non-political women's service organization dedicated to promoting historic preservation, education, and patriotism. And membership in the DAR is open to any woman over the age of 18 who can prove lineal descent from an ancestor who aided in achieving American independence.
Okay. And you have an organization here in Juneau. About how many members do you have that participate here?
Our local chapter is called the Inside Passage Chapter, and we have it's 27 members as of today.
Okay.
Yay.
Yeah.
We just had another approved. That's why I hesitated on the number.
And you're a service organization. What are some philanthropies or organizations you participate with here in the community?
The DAR will promote projects in the categories of historic preservation, education, or patriotism. For example, in education, there have been times when we volunteer to read to children at the schools, or, for example, a patriotic project would be distributing flags at the naturalization ceremonies at the federal courthouse. And certainly historic preservation, there's lots of different projects that can fall under that as well, from anything from marking an important historic site or marking a grave of someone who was very famous in our history.
Okay. And you have an award ceremony coming up, is that right?
We do. It's this Saturday, March 7th, and we're going to be giving out 6 different awards to locals who are very talented and dedicated to our community. The 6 awards we're giving out are for Women in American History, Historic Preservation, Women in the Arts, Community Service, the Chapter Award for Conservation, and the DAR Distinguished Citizen Award. And we're very excited to honor, for our very first award ceremony as a chapter, these individuals.
Okay, and where is this award ceremony?
The award ceremony is going to be held at the UAS Recreation Center in classroom number 115. It starts at 4 p.m., and light refreshments will be served, and certainly it's open to the public.
Okay, and if somebody wants more information, Regina, where can they go?
They can either email our chapter, at insidepassagegar@yahoo.com, or they may telephone me at area code 907-957-4263.
All right, Regina Falache, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, bye.
Bye.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend, 'cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor, no one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa.
Oh,
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 2nd. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 10 minutes till the top of the hour, and I am now joined in the studio by the Executive Director of AWARE, Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. Thank you for coming, Sarah Lynn.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And also, one of your four women of distinction, Miss Ernestine Hayes. Thank you for coming in, Ernestine.
Thanks, Scott.
So nice to see both of you. Thanks for coming in on a beautiful day. Sarah Lynn, can you start by giving us a brief description of Women of Distinction?
Sure, I'm happy to. Women of Distinction is a celebration of women in our community who've done amazing things, really kind of made outstanding contributions. We often know the women and don't really recognize all that they've done. And the AWARE Board of Directors solicits nominations and each year selects from those nominations four women to honor. And this is our 19th year, actually. The event is Saturday night, March 7th at Centennial Hall. We have a plated dinner and silent auction. And each of the women speaks about what inspires her, what brought her to this point. So it's a very inspiring, fun evening, raising funds to support our work with victims of domestic and sexual violence.
You know, I think a lot of us are familiar with Ernestine's work here in the community. Speaking on the board's behalf, what do you think brought her to your attention?
Well, I think it's a lot of the contributions that she's made, the writing that she's done, the teaching that she's done, the depth and breadth of her experience that she's shared in many, many ways with many, many people in our community and throughout Alaska.
Yeah, I agree. In full disclosure, I am a former student of Ernestine's and a big, big fan of her writing and teaching. So, well, Ernestine, you get to speak on, what night is it again, Sarah Lynn?
Saturday night.
May I ask a few things that you might talk about?
One of the things that I've been thinking of is it came from when we went out to AWARE, the four women first gathered and introduced ourselves and so on. And I was very, very impressed by the caliber of the service that the other women have performed for the community, for Juno, and for women. And I shared that I've so often been on the other end of that service. I've so often received those services. And I wanted them to see the embodiment of what their work, what good their work does. And I think that I will probably try to speak on that, because so often the people who support this sort of worthwhile project don't have the chance to see the success and the happiness and the strength and the health that it brings. So I'm hoping to be able to communicate that.
Yeah, the kind of service that got you to where you are now as an award-winning author and a full-time professor, sharing your knowledge with young people in our community. Can you talk about that a little bit, Ernestine, how you split your time between writing and teaching and what each means to you?
Well, I do. I really do spend a lot of my creative energy on developing syllabi. So I use a lot of my imagination and creativity to try to think of ways that will engage and inspire my students. And like anyone else, I find that the greatest inspiration is an externally applied deadline. So I've recently had a couple deadlines, and I just finished a chapter for an upcoming anthology, which I'm really looking forward to seeing in print. But this summer I'll be spending 2 months at a residency with actually only writing to do, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Teaching takes up a lot of time and energy, right?
It does, but it's very rewarding when I see students, the creative writing students, of course, that have produced wonderful work. And then in the first year level, we have some really programs that are devoted to supporting our first year students. And so I get a lot of satisfaction out of that.
Well, I know they do, too. Sarah Lynn, you'll be honoring, like you said, four women this week, and we get to meet each of them on a Juno afternoon.
That's right.
Can you just give us their names right now, though?
Sure. Sherry Paul, we'll be meeting her tomorrow, Wednesday, Betty Kapler, and Thursday, Lorraine Durr.
Okay, and can you give us the details once more about the event on Saturday night?
Yes, thank you. People can purchase tickets still at AWARE. Phone number 586-6623. The doors open at 5:30 at Centennial Hall. We'll be in all three ballrooms. Tickets are $70. We'll have a silent auction, and the program begins at 7 p.m. Tom Loker and Clay Good will be playing music from 5:30 to 7. Angelina Ahrens is our MC. Taylor Vidic is going to sing an opening song, and we've invited some folks to make opening remarks as well.
Well, that sounds like a great evening. Thank you both so much for coming in today and sharing your time with us. You're welcome, and we'll look forward to seeing you on Saturday. Anything that we're missing? Anything you'd like to add?
What are you writing? I'll put you on the spot.
I don't have a ton of time for creative work myself, Ernestine. But I have some ideas. I'll tell you about them later.
All right.
Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
Afternoon, I'll be your host again, and we'll get the details about Saturday's Discovery Southeast banquet and auction. KJ Metcalf will be here to update us on the Friends of Admiralty annual meeting. We'll get a preview of Perseverance Theater's upcoming production of The Odd Couple, and Sherry Paul, one of AWARE's four Women of Distinction for this year, will be here to talk about her nomination. Tonight, increasing clouds, lows around 26. And Tuesday, chance of snow in the morning, rain likely in the afternoon, little or no snow accumulation, highs around 40. Wednesday, rain likely, highs around 42. Thursday, rain likely, and looks like rain going into the weekend. All things considered, coming up next,